And then you know what he has said?
What did he have said?
I will tell you what he has said. He said, he said, I'm going to just put cheese on this one end of the burrito.
Woo! Damn! Might be our opening scene. And welcome to A Bit Drunk. This is the Bit Pubs audio podcast in which we have a discussion, a conversation about console video gaming and anything and everything revolving around it, past, present, and future. And whilst doing so, we are having a few too many fine crafted beers and spirituous beverages. My name is Ian Greer, and I've got a couple of other guys drinking and talking video games with me, and starting to my left, and to your whatever you are, if you're listening to this in stereo, it could be your left, it could be your right. He smells like teen spirit, Danny Quinn.
Hello, everybody.
Also, joining us for the first time, and definitely not the last time, to my right, or to your left, depending on how you have your pan plant panned out in your car stereo, or your stereo where you're listening to this and mowing your lawn, as people have done in the past, Mr. Mustache, Trevor Dallier.
Hello.
We've jumped the shark this episode, and we're going to make some predictions. And Danny Gwynn is going to tell you about all those predictions that we're going to be making.
All right, guys. So this week, what we're going through is, in the past, there have been some genres of games that have been popular. Currently, there are some genres of games that are popular. And we think in the future, hey, some sorts of genres of games are going to be popular. And we're going to be talking about what we think those are and a little bit more as we get into A Bit Drunk.
Welcome to A Bit Drunk Story Corps.
And then cut to like two episodes ago, James recorded with no pants on.
Yeah,
that was pretty good.
Because it was really hot in here.
It was
recording.
It was super hot.
Super hot. So he just like
James like took his pants off. He like rolled his shirt all up. And he was just like,
did he have a horse?
Sadly, no. He did leave here on a horse, though.
Okay, great.
But during the podcast, no horse.
Weird, because he drove a car here.
I know.
It was a horse.
Not sure where the horse came from.
Not sure where his car went. Who cares?
That's what happens when you're drunk.
Drunk and pantsless.
Speaking of drunk and pantsless, segue. We've been drinking a lot of sucking some fine craft drinkables. And Trevor, you brought a delightful drinking gift for us. Would you care to discuss it?
The new Belgium from the Lips of Faith series, which is one of my favorite series both to say and to drink.
I was thinking that was the title, but that's a series that they're
doing? That's the series, yeah. They've got a bunch of different brews in this series. They've got the only ones that I've had so far are sours, actually. So I was surprised that this was not a sour. Because I've had a lychee sour, which was actually my top number one summer drink, which I hope they release again. But this is called Hof 10 Dormal, which is their golden ale, and Hof 10 Dormal.
That was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's really nice.
It was very good.
It is coming in bottles right now. It's coming in a 4-pack bottle.
Sunflower seeds and wild carrot herb. That is what it was brewed with.
The whole time I was like, it just felt like earthy.
But it's got a nice Belgian, just a really nice Belgian feel to it. Quite lovely.
I felt it paired really well with the delicious burritos that you brought, Danny.
I brought my standard burritos from a far above standard burrito place located in South San Jose called Taqueria El Corral,
which is where I plan on getting my next all of my meals.
We've been over this several times, but there's just something about that place. There's so many good little taquerias around here, but I think
when
we were eating before in California. Sorry, we're in California. And hell, I mean, God, even Chicago, I had a couple like just around the corner from me that were awesome. But there's something about this place where it's like everything is on point.
Tortillas on point. Rice, beans.
Yeah.
Cheese. Yeah. Everything is on point.
And the quantities of each together is like, that's the thing I feel like is so hard to get right. And they get it right every single time.
Yeah. And it's consistent throughout the duration of burrito.
Yep.
And so the New Belgium, I don't know why, but it just complemented it so well.
That was a roasty, nice malt to it.
Yes.
That was wonderful. That was absolutely wonderful.
And then, Ian, you brought us something tasty to drink, too.
I brought, this time around, I brought Lagunitas Stupid Wit, where if you are familiar with Lagunitas, they've been making their Hop Stupid for a long time, which is actually an extremely hoppy variant of one of their ales, actually one of their pale ales. I really liked Hop Stupid. It's very good. It's a kind of punchy to the face. If that's kind of what you're into for beer. This one, however, switches it up and makes it into a German wheat beer, or wheat beer, if you will.
Huh?
Which would be wheat beer.
Wheat.
Huh? The hell you say?
The cool whip beer.
Cool whip.
Cool wheat beer.
Stupid wheat
beer. And it's also, you know, it's punny, what a stupid wit, you know.
I don't get it.
I just got it now. I really did.
No, guys, I'm serious.
Stupid and wit.
That's
funny.
Stupid wit. So if you want to shy away from really kind of the pale ale-y, hoppy things, but you like something that's still very robust, kind of very forward, Stupid Wit. Lagunitas Stupid Wit.
I like this because it's a wit beer with some hoppiness.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, so it has that smoothness of the wit beer, that smooth heaviness of a wit beer because they have they're so wheat content forward, but it just has that extra little punch to it, which is just hits the spot.
A good lingering flavor.
It feels good.
Yeah, it feels right.
Feels
Danny,
so nice.
I feel right.
Thank you. In my mouth.
Perfect.
I'm so glad we have that on. On digital tape.
Perfect. That is either the intro or the outro, probably. Just that little bit.
I might just reuse it because I'm leaving that in. That's just quality voice acting right there.
Yeah. That's better than any of the schlock that you or I put out.
Trevor, what you been playing video game wise? Playing anything interesting?
Oh, good Lord. What have I been playing? I sold my PlayStation.
Original?
My PlayStation 3. A number of months ago, and have not yet picked up a PlayStation 4, which is what I'm intending on picking up.
You're going to wait for the Pro to come out?
I am
going to
wait for the Pro. So yeah, there's no point in
not. Do you have 4K TV?
I don't.
But you're probably going to.
Well, even if you don't, the guts are going to be better.
The guts are just going to be better, and I'm assuming they've learned something about
the price point's the same as current PlayStation.
Yeah.
So, the Slim's nice because it's, you know, lower price point, and if you don't care, like, it's...
I don't see any reason to buy an older gut interior of a system that has been updated.
Yeah.
No matter what.
I can definitely understand that.
I'm with you on that.
If it's going to be my only system, which it is.
Yeah.
So I've strictly been playing iOS games recently.
Really? Yeah. You haven't even delved
into any hot recommendations?
No. Oh, God.
Because you had a running PC for a while, too, right?
My PC's still chugging away. Most recently played Fallout on that, but that was the last.
The original Fallout?
Fallout 4.
Okay.
No. I mean, good Lord, did I ever play the original Fallout?
So good.
That's neither here nor there.
Intelligence 3 is the only way to play.
I would murder for any of the isometric Fallouts on iOS. I would murder anyone to get those. So,
I mean, we could murder Ian. I'm not saying that that'll necessarily bring us the game.
Would that do it?
Maybe not, but I'd feel better.
Okay. All right.
We brought you this fat nerd who's skeptical about iOS games as sacrifice.
Yeah.
This appeases us, the Bethesda gods. You have shown us what you got. Here is your Fallout on iOS.
So what have I been playing? I've been playing Pokemon, which I am currently about to delete.
Pokemon Go? Yeah,
Pokemon Go.
I'm sorry.
And I've been playing Flip Diving.
Flip
That's
diving.
About it.
Wait, this just came across my radar the other day, and I saw people just sending screenshots of them, like,
oh my God,
hitting diving, like, their character just, like, hitting diving boards at terrible angles, so it's like, well, now you're paralyzed, definitely. Yeah,
it's just a ragdoll diving game that provides me the few moments of entertainment that I need to get through my day without alcohol. And then
I had alcohol.
And then I stop and I start drinking and things get a lot better. So
everything's better.
And then it's okay again. That's fantastic.
So yeah, so that's what I've been playing.
How about near future things you're looking forward to playing, maybe?
Near future, well, I'm looking forward to getting back into GTA 5.
Okay.
Which I'm going to I played half of the campaign on my PC. Then borrowed an Xbox from someone, played a tenth of the campaign, and sunk 30 hours or so into online game before I gave the said Xbox back. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to finishing that. Then I probably will still pick up No Man's Sky, even though I shat on it so much earlier. But
I think that's going to get better with updates.
I'm interested in it. Ambient games, too.
I think it's not as horrid as everyone says it is. Everyone really focused on some things that the developer said that turned out not to be entirely true.
On what was promised versus what was delivered.
Right.
And I rode that hype train the whole way and then, you know, hit the wall with everybody else. But fortunately, didn't have a system to even try it on. So I kind of saved myself the disappointment, and I think I'll come into it with better expectations.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
And then I'll probably pick up all of the classic PS4 games that everybody has told me to get.
Man.
If there's so much that I need to play.
There is so many.
It's comical.
Backlog.
Yeah, it's just comical. So,
already adding to probably our already ridiculous backlogs, but...
Yep. I keep buying fucking PS4 games whenever they're on sale.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I think it's $20 at Best Buy right now, and I get my Gamers Club whatever discount, so it's $16. Sure, I'll buy that.
I think The Last of Us is top of my list.
Oh, God.
That is a great game.
That's top.
What is nice about that one?
I'm really excited about it.
And I don't know anything about it. 10 hours for Last of Us? Have you played it?
Yes, but I haven't finished it, although I'm fairly certain I'm at the end of the game.
I want to say this is a few beers in, definitely, but I want to say like 8-10 hours for
that's
that one.
Easy. That's an easy.
Maybe a three-play session.
So good.
Oh, it's so good. Such a good game.
It's so sad and so good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's just great.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. Yeah. So that's probably tops on my.
Yeah, definitely throw that one on there. Danny, what you been playing?
I've been playing a number of things. So I've been on an Overwatch kick for a while now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm finally getting to the point where I'm ready to ease off of Overwatch, because I am experiencing sort of the key problem with team-based shooters, and that is. Not just shooters where you're on a team, like a Call of Duty, you play as a team. But really the point of Call of Duty usually is just kill the other guys. And if you're good enough, you can succeed even with your team being not so great. In Overwatch, you have these different classifications of characters that have different skill sets. And your team needs to have a good balance of characters that are both offensive or tanky, or maybe you have a healer or whatever. And they all kind of need to work together in order to succeed. And what I've been finding is that in the multiplayer mode of competitive, where theoretically people are supposed to like give a shit about succeeding in the game and then like do things to ultimately go towards winning, as opposed to like the general fuck around mode of quick play, where you just kind of do whatever you want. People are not doing that. They continue to just screw around. They give no shits about what the team is trying to do. And so I feel like I just keep getting put on these teams where I get in and it's just doomed from the start.
Yeah.
And there goes 15 minutes of where I'm just getting my ass kicked. And to me, that's extremely frustrating because I have an infant child to take care of, and gaming time is precious.
Yeah.
So That's a very frustrating experience. Yeah. So in the last like week, I've kind of like, all right, I'm ready to put Overwatch down for at least a little bit and come back to it after I've kind of cooled my jets a little. So in that period, since I set it down.
Can you, just a quick question. Can you join teams, like group teams where you're playing all at the same time? And
yeah. So like on the PS4, and that's how I've been primarily playing. There's a couple other guys from work who play on PlayStation Online. We all form a party. And then you can invite people into your in-game party, and then you can join games as that party.
As that group.
and the matching system is really good. It will, like, if you have a group of three, there's always a team of six. It's six on six every match. Mm-hmm. If you have a group of three that you're playing with, it will try very hard to put a group of three on the other team as well.
Oh.
And so, like, we'll often play where it's like a group of three, group of two, and a solo player, and a group of three, a group of two, and a solo player.
Cool.
So it does, like, their algorithms are really smart like that. But yes, you can. So if you got a group together of six people who actually all gave a shit and you all went on at the same time, you probably have a pretty solid chance of doing well. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case. So I stepped away from that for a little bit, and I dusted off an old iPad that I had and remembered or realized that I actually bought Final Fantasy Tactics on iOS for my iPad. Final Fantasy Tactics, I recently rated as my number one most influential game for me. I love it. So I played it on console before. Now I'm playing it on iOS.
How do you like it on mobile?
I like it because it's got the updated like translation. It's the... what was the version that they released for the PSP? It's that.
Oh, okay. Where
it's got a couple new classes. They redid the translation, so it's much more like authentic.
Not War of the Lions. That was Tactics A2. I can't remember.
Are you sure it's not PSP. War of the Lions?
I thought that was Tactics A2 for the DS. That was the Tactics Advance 2, I thought. Maybe
it I want to say it was War of the Lions. I don't. All right, well, anyway, fuck it. Yeah. So I've been playing that.
The PSP version of Final Fantasy Tactics. Yeah.
And then you were talking me up on a game last podcast that you were playing, which is Bravely Second.
Yeah.
So I went to the internet and I said, do I need to have played Bravely Default to play Bravely Second? And the internet said yes. So I went on a hunt for a used copy of Bravely Default.
Which is kind of rough around.
And I found one.
Yeah.
And I've had this like chunk of.
Is this why you asked me about the old game store?
Yes.
Nearby. Oh, okay.
They were closed. So I didn't go there. But one of the GameStops near my house had one.
Oh no!
Just
shit,
one
really?
Copy. And I went down and picked it up.
Maybe that was because I looked it up a little while ago, and I think I just saw one in like 250-mile radius. Right. So you probably got it.
So I went. Yeah. Fuck you. So I went and picked it up. That game is great.
Bravely Default?
It's so good.
That was that when that came out, and because I grabbed the demo for that game when it came out, and it was on like Reddit and some other RPG forums and stuff. And the constant thing was like Square remembered how to make a great game.
It's so good.
Holy shit! They got it back together. Whoever did this, promote these people and make them make good games.
Well, and one of the best parts for me. Is and one of the things I love the most about Final Fantasy Tactics is the job system, where you can become like a level 5 white mage, and then that you can use that skill set when you are starting out as a black mage, then you can have healing spells and damage spells, whatever. You can have all these crazy combinations. The story's really good.
Yeah.
Side note: the voice acting, terrible.
Yeah.
It's awful. But
voice acting is so
I didn't come to this game for the voice acting, so I don't care that much about it. The music's good. It's a little hidden at first, but I love the mechanic of either increasing or decreasing the encounter rate.
Like we're talking about that the last podcast.
Yeah. I was getting ready to fight a boss
yesterday
in this game. And I was like, man, it would be really cool if I could level my guys up one more time. So I just ramped up the encounter rate.
Oh, that's cool.
And I just ground out like 15 fights and then healed and then fought the boss with like plus 2 levels or something.
We talked about, I brought this game up in one of our last podcasts. Like there's just this kind of slider mechanism where you could say, because you'd be, if you remember playing like RPGs like Final Fantasy, you just like, I'm going to walk across the world map. And then you get like, you keep
random
fighting
encounters.
50 times to go from one little town to the other. You can change, you can turn a slider to like turn down the random
encounters. By the way, is the only thing that stop me from playing Red Dead Redemption.
Really?
Just yeah, the random encounters. Just the
random encounters.
I love so often.
Red Dead Redemption.
So yeah, often.
I love that game.
So if I could have dialed that down,
yeah, and you could say like, just for now, I just want to go in quest mode. Yeah, just for now, I just want to go in quest mode. Maybe you'll hit one on the way there.
Yeah.
Cool, perfect. And then it's useful for situations like that where it's like, I got to beef some people up. I got to get, you know, like, yeah. I got to get like my characters better. I need them to learn some new shit. Turn it all the way up.
Well, and there's even like interesting toggles to go along with that. Like you can turn off gaining XP. So if you just want to level up. So there's your character level and then there's your job level. So if you're like, I just want to make my guy better as a fighter, then you can stop gaining XP so he stays at like level 5 or whatever and then just have him gain job levels.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really interesting thing. So anyway, I'm loving that. Okay, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, we should say, however, too, like Bravely Default is still available via digital from the Nintendo
eShop. Yes, you can absolutely go get it digital.
But if you want a physical, if you and I like physical copies of the game.
Yeah, if you're like me and you want to have a physical copy, although sadly it didn't come with a box, so which is kind of bums me out. But anyway, that's what I've been playing.
Nice.
How about you?
Along those lines, I've actually been playing a lot more 3DS titles. It's been a busy few weeks, including I spent a week back in Chicago. So I actually didn't even bring my Game Boy with me because I was like, I'm just going to be drinking the whole time. So that's my job.
Drinking and not playing video games.
Yeah, it was weird. I just drank
disappointed.
And walked to the next bar and then drank and ate.
Oh, wow. Well, that's acceptable.
That was great times.
That sounds amazing.
It was wonderful. I love going home. But most of my play has been centered around, because I picked up the new Nintendo 3DS a little while ago, so the updated one. So I was like, you know, I really need to take this thing for a spin. So I had Triforce. I mentioned this last time. I had Triforce Heroes Waiting in the Wings. I had Bravely Second. I set Bravely Second off to the side because I also got Final Fantasy Explorers. So I wanted to play that for a little bit. Ironically, and also on my PS Vita, I got Ragnarok Odyssey for like $1 at a GameStop one. I saw it was like 99 cents for like box copy and everything. I was like, yeah, sure, what the hell? Like, Ragnarok's usually a good game. And they're both that kind of like, you're in a hub town, and then you get a quest, and then you've got to go do it. You know, like, think like your starting quest, like, go kill 4 warthogs or whatever, and come back with their horns. And like, it's just to kind of build you up, and then you keep getting more and more complicated quests. And I think what's really interesting is they're both very good games, but a good game can do – there's something about it that does it well. And I think it may make each and every one of those not just a level-up experience for your character, but also a learning experience for you as a player, like how to play the game better and how to be better at the game. Ragnarok's good. It's very entertaining. It's extremely customizable. Final Fantasy Explorers has just been doing it well because I feel like every time I go, even on one of those, when I first started playing those basic quests, I might have a little tutorial screen of like, oh, your character can do this, blah, blah, blah. And then it was like, no, go, like, put that into action. Go ahead and learn this. And it just does it in such clever ways that I almost even can't articulate that it's, sometimes I'll play those games. It's like, it's hard to get past those initial stages of just like the learn how to do things, go get 5 warthog tusks or whatever, and then come back with it. This one's kept me really interested in going with it. And a very customizable character. You can change like a lot of job classes. You can change job systems as you go along. It already has early on rewards. And a lot of times normally you have to wait for new armor and new shit. You build up gil really quick. They have a lot of stuff early on so you can change things out. So I've been really enjoying that. That one's really good. I'm just now starting to like, it starts trickling in the story. They do it, very classic Final Fantasy-esque too, where they do it well to trickle into it. Like they have a grand setting overhead where you already kind of have a general idea what might be happening, but then your character's learning more and more. So I've been really enjoying the hell out of that one. And Triforce Heroes has been really good. I've only played the single player version of that. You can do like the local multiplayer, which is was Nintendo's big thing about it, where you have 3 people together, maybe up to 4 people, a 3DS in this game, and then everybody plays a different version of Link, and then you have to like jump on each other's shoulders and then do this and then move this around and throw this Link over here to solve this puzzle. And it's not a traditional Zelda game where you're going through and getting stuff and beating dungeons. It's like, it's all very multi-person puzzle oriented.
Right. It's like,
and this, yeah,
it's like the 4 Swords Heroes.
Exactly. Yeah. And the single player version is a lot of fun, and it uses what's called a totem sort of system. So you might have like 3 different color Link characters moving around, but only one can be active at a time. So you have to be smart in which one is the active one, and then it can put this one on his shoulder and then do this and then shoot an arrow here and all this kind of stuff. So it's a lot of fun, like really creative. It takes the best part of like the Zelda puzzle stuff and puts it into its own unique game environment. So I've been playing that a lot. And then I fired up Ratchet and Clank a few times on my PS4.
Because
I've talked about that the past few times. That's a great game. Sit down, play a chapter of that. You know, if you're like, I got 15 minutes and I want to have fun and be entertained.
It's super fun.
The graphics on this game. Yeah, and just this reboot is...
Is it a reboot of the original?
It's not a reboot of the original. It's just kind of a continuation of the series. Okay. It is the series itself. It's moving forward. But they let it go for a little while. Yeah. And now it's like, let's breathe in some fresh air of Ratchet and Clank. Let's exhale a re-envisioning of what made this game great. The customization, the platforming, the story humor of the game. Just that kind of, I don't know. In my head, it's that late 90s kind of cartoon humor. But they are aware that it's late 90s cartoon humor, and they're playing on that hardcore. And the graphics were incredible, and the cutscenes are amazing. They did the movie a little while ago, and I think I've touched on it. The graphics in this game are better than their movie, and the story is better than the movie. So like it is like Pixar stuff that you're playing through. So much fun. So much fun. And on top of that, it's just a great game. It's a game that feels good. We've talked before, like playing a good platformer relies on such good controls. Like a control that feels natural, is snappy to what you're wanting to do, isn't floaty, is accurate to how, like, I press this button, mm-hmm. I expect them to jump this far based on what they do. Such a good game. So nothing terribly new. I've definitely had some pickups here and there. Oh, yeah. Oh, shit. The other thing that I played... I fired up for half an hour. I brought in through friends traveling to Tokyo. I've acquired a Japanese Sega Saturn a little while ago. So our friend Faye, friend of the show, her trip to Tokyo, she brought me back a Sega Saturn from a retro game store there, a Japanese version of it, and some just random ass games, including Street Fighter the game, the movie, the Japanese version,
right.
Which we played one day. And this is one of the worst games ever. It's so terribly bad. Wonderfully terrible, as I think is the word I'm looking for. But our friend Phil, who we've been threatening to have on the show for a little while, was there a little while ago, and he was at Super Potato, and he was like, I remember you mentioning you liked this series, or you said you wanted to. So he brought me Lunar Silver Star, which had a Japan-only release on Sega Saturn, which I've talked about before. This Lunar series was one of my favorites. So he brought that back for me. It's like, oh, fuck yeah, that's awesome. This game is so good. And like the Sega Saturn is such a hard one to get because it was Japan only. And it was like $5 because it's Japan. What is there? They made a million copies. But so I was like, you know what? I'm going to try this. I was at work late one night. I was like, I'm going to try this. I plugged it in, forgetting the entire time the entire goddamn thing was Japanese. So I gave it the old college try for half an hour. But then I was like, I have no idea what the fuck is going on. Everything's squiggly lines. And I don't know what's going on here, but it was fun. But I was like, all right, I should probably get a translation guy someday whenever I'm gonna play this. But man, I gave it the old college try. I don't know if I insulted other characters or what was going on in my dialogue choices. But, so that was a lot of fun. That's what we're drinking. That's what we're playing. Let's do some drunk talk.
Let's do it.
One drink for my trouble, two drinks for my love, three drinks to blind my pain, and then another one for my wobble. But now I'm wallowing in morbidly fog. I can say that I'm sure sworn. Now I'm walking right home to my bed to try to dream it all away. I don't know how I even keep it going. Screaming every night until the morning.
Back in the early in the summer. What was your bit? Was there the prospect who every time you laughed it was a different sound?
You always hear Roy.
Just a 49er.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Way more drunk.
Way more drunk.
Oh, yeah.
Well. Fuck, what are we doing here? What do we do?
I don't even know what we do anymore.
No one does.
Nobody does.
We should probably get in.
I think we should go.
Should we just get way in there?
Get way.
Way down in there.
So this is a podcast in which we discuss console video gaming, past, present,
and future.
Wait, are we doing? Are we doing the intro?
No, no.
Are we just explaining the podcast?
We did the intro. Wink.
Oh, wink. Yeah, wink. We totally did it.
Already recorded that.
Yeah, wink. That's definitely recorded.
I don't know what you're talking about.
God damn it, Trevor.
All right, so I'm here. Once upon a time, we totally don't record the podcast in order.
Yeah,
we record the body of the podcast, what we refer to as drunk talk.
Mm-hmm.
Then we record. Nice. Then we record the outro.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Then we record the intro, and then we record the part where we talk about what we've been drinking,
what we're playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
okay. That's all staying in the podcast, including this and this and this.
What about this?
No.
Damn.
Cut. Edit point.
Wait.
Fuck.
Can I keep this in?
Yeah, go.
Yep. Yeah.
This
yeah.
is all it.
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah. This is great.
But this I was, Danny, I was making...
Agree to disagree.
I was making a reference to the intro, which we totally already recorded.
Oh, yeah. Totally recorded.
Which is...
This I remember
is
a, that.
This, yeah, good. Yeah. Yeah. This, yeah. Absolutely.
Trevor was there.
This is a podcast where we discuss the past, present, and future of console gaming and everything and everything involved within it. But what we're going to do, we're going to try and put on the goggles. We're going to look to the future here a little bit, and we're going to make some predictions, which are probably going to be incorrect, but we're still going to make them anyways. And we're probably going to look to the past.
Isn't that just stabbing in the dark?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Right.
Yeah.
Shoot. It could be shooting in the dark.
That comes after the stabbing, I think.
Shooting fish in the dark.
Shooting fish in a
but what happens? Dark. But what happens in the barrels? I'm going to hide in this barrel.
You're in a barrel, and you shoot fish from it.
So you hide in the barrel.
Uh-huh. And you have a fish
gun. And wait for the fish to walk by.
No, you have a fish gun.
When do I turn the lights off?
Yeah. Oh,
the lights should be off at the beginning.
Yeah, oh. The lights are off. Or you're just in the barrel, and it's dark, and you can't see, but you got a fish gun.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
I get it.
Your head is also in the barrel.
All right, I get it now.
I don't understand why this analogy doesn't make sense.
All right, Ian, go on. We're in the dark in a barrel shooting fish with a fish gun. Got it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
So, all of us have been playing video games for a very, very, very long time.
So long.
We are old.
Old people. Men.
Especially Ian.
Especially Ian.
Especially Ian.
I just had a birthday.
Ian, the old
You're
one.
Now old years old.
Oh, God. I'm older than that. I was old years old last year.
Holy Ooh. Shit.
Yeah, I'm
You're older than. Years old now.
Yeah, I'm older, yeah.
Older. That's depressing.
Yeah.
Follow-up question. Do your balls graze the water when you sit on the toilet?
They've turned to powder. They've just fluttered away, like an old dandelion, just
like cotton candy,
like cotton candy in a gentle breeze. just flew off the stick.
Wow, that works surprisingly
that flew
well.
Away too. Yeah, it's just all Ken doll.
So it's just a flat fleshy patch.
Mm-hmm. I can only poop now.
The. Oh, so all of it's just gone.
Yeah, it's just all gone. That floated away, too. It's just a Ken doll down there, except for the pooping hole.
Oh. I suppose that's nice that they left you with that.
Yeah, it's
Most people pee, too.
I don't have that anymore. I mean, I think it just all merged.
It's just kind of a slurry.
It's like a cloaca.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a bird, yeah.
Or a cockroach.
Like a
cockroach.
More like a cockroach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly. That has everything to do with video games.
With video games. But we've been playing video games for a very long time, especially myself. And we've seen fads. We've seen things come and go as far as what's the most popular genre. Like, what's everybody buying? What's everybody playing? And one of the things that comes to mind is, like, the people I would encounter who I never really perceived would play a video game. But then they would say, like, oh, I bought Final Fantasy VII. This is back in my PlayStation days. It's like, oh, yeah, I've been playing Final Fantasy VII. And I would look at them quizzically because, like, I never knew you played video games. You've never mentioned it before. You never said anything about that. And that was that time when everybody was kind of playing PlayStation RPGs. Like, PlayStation was new, so there was this huge fad for that. And then similarly, Metal Gear Solid. So it might have been more anecdotal evidence, but that's just what was within our cultural zeitgeist.
There you go.
Our localized zeitgeist.
Yeah, Metal Gear was the... One. Very popular.
Extremely popular game. One of those games where people would say, like, oh, I have a PlayStation, I've been playing Metal Gear.
I would put Halo into that category. Yeah,
exactly.
Like, and people who were not gamers played this
Halo.
Game.
And I think we'll probably reference Halo several times.
We'll get into that.
But there obviously you would have actual sales charts to go along with it. It would actually show off, like, wow, this is actually a greatest hit. This is a bestseller. This is one of the highest grossing games on the system itself. So there truly, truly were a lot of people playing them. And it seems to be, I would say, in recent history, and this might be up for a debate, probably the first-person shooter has been dominating. Maybe and this might be part of the conversation, maybe open world, but I don't know what, if you guys want to chime in and say, like, well, open world could be a shooter or an RPG. Or,
I think open world sort of exists kind of on its own as well as, like, between a couple of different genres, but mostly I'd put open world games into their own little box. Shooters are more what I think of as, like, they have the lobby-based queue up for multiplayer. Mm-hmm, there's usually, like, a very straightforward campaign if there is a story mode. But I think that...
A lot of on-rails campaigns, too.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would immediately associate, nowadays, Call of Duty.
Call of Duty.
Call of Duty is the...
Starting with Call of Duty 2.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when it got good.
Yeah.
Although I got to say that the story... mode for like the first four Call of Duties was fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it just took a fucking nosedive.
Yeah.
After they brought in like the modern warfare or whatever. Then the multiplayer got way good and the single player got not so good.
Yeah.
It's still like I've actually, because I made it a point for a little while to play the single player because I still don't do much multiplayer gaming either because of just it requires more time than I'm able to devote to it or there's just sometimes where I'm like, I just want to be myself and play a video game. And as we know, I like story video games. I like narrative games, so I like the single player campaigns. But have the recent ones? Have they still been maintaining? Because they did the one. What was it? Was it 5? Where they had like the Kevin Spacey bit? Like he kind of played as Game of Thrones? Fucking House of Cards? Game of Thrones? House of Cards?
I don't know. I haven't Modern played Warfare the more recent 2.
Was it Modern Warfare 2?
Modern okay. Warfare 2, I think, is what you're thinking of.
Yeah.
I think the big part of the surge of shooters is the multiplayer aspect. That actually has sort of risen alongside faster internet speeds, faster home internet speeds.
Yeah.
And the... more connected we are with our phones and you know, text messaging and stuff like, we're not really talking to each other. People aren't going to other people's houses and sitting down and playing a split screen. Yeah. You know, it's not the heyday of GoldenEye or Halo.
Yeah. I think we really, and we talked about this a little bit on the last podcast, is that with Halo 2 and the advent of Xbox Live, and kind of the ramping up of faster internet speeds in everybody's house, I think kind of it's just taken off like a shot from that point. And I find anecdotally that the type of people that are likely to be jumping on those are a lot of like college age kids, men probably mostly. And, you know, like that's most marketing targets like men age 25 to 40.
What is, I think the average age of a gamer is 31.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. At that market. So yeah, it's at the 25 to 45 market or possibly even 50 market at this point. So
anyway, I think that's why we're seeing these games selling so well is because the target audience is probably the majority of gamers that are out there, just statistically speaking.
And I see the ads for things like your Modern Warfare type games, any first-person shooters, Gears of War, things like that. I see them playing during sports a lot.
Right.
Like during, you know, big sporting events. You're going to see huge AAA titles, major, amazing trailers that look like... you're actually in war, you know, and it's like, you control your soldier, you know.
Well, like Modern Warfare had that ad campaign where it was just like the everyday people running around in the war zone. I think like Jimmy Kimmel has like an RPG on his shoulder at one point. Yeah. And I think that aired during maybe the Super Bowl. So like that sort of, it's really trying to capture that, like, look, you're in the game. Mm-hmm. And of course, playing during the Super Bowl. Yeah. Very, very popular.
Well, event, how often do you hear, I think this kind of speaks to the current fad for that, is how often do you hear, well, should I get Xbox One or PlayStation 4? Or, I mean, the people who are even more informed will throw a Wii U in there. But, oh, no, James, Wii U.
Oh.
Yeah, he usually just yells that.
Wii U.
Thank you, Trevor. That was...
He does a little squeaky one.
Woo!
That's the James.
Yeah, it's the James.
Ow!
Yeah.
Was that right?
You know what? Okay, I'll
we'll fix these
further
in post.
Away. You're getting colder, but okay. Keep working on
we'll
it.
We'll fix them in post.
There we go. That's it. That's that wasn't it, but I liked it better.
Yeah, right. That's way better.
That came from the burritos.
Replaced.
Can we just layer some castanets in anytime we mention burritos during this podcast?
Yes.
That's all I want.
And just like an A minor beat strummed on the guitar. Like really quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
For sure.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll definitely do that.
Perfect.
He won't do that.
I'm not going to do that. I'm not even going to... fuck you people.
You're not going to fuck us? Yeah. I was lured here under false pretenses then.
That you would get me drunk.
The fellator.
I really want to see what that like bad spandex costume looks like.
I want to see what his... what his light in the sky looks like.
Well, he's a villain, right? So
oh,
he's not going to have a signal.
All right.
Maybe
he'll have
a
calling card. He spray paints a calling card. He spray paints like just an erect penis.
I was really hoping that he would be like a mastermind bad guy and maybe have cronies of some kind.
Oh, and they would all have some interesting costumes.
Yeah, and they'd be called like the Suck It Squad or something. Like
the Suck It Squad.
I don't know. That's just a working title.
It's where, yeah. Don't steal our ideas.
Yeah, copyright.
Copyright. TM. Yeah.
You thieving bastards. Anywho.
First person shooters. Popular with the college
kids. They're
popular
with the kids. The kids, they love them.
Can't get enough.
Spaceball's the first person shooter.
Man, I would play the hell out of that.
Right? Yeah. I really, really would. Also,
it would be
the last
hilarious.
Two. Yeah. Never mind. I'm not going to bring that up because it's sad.
Let's
just move on. Honestly, where the fuck did we leave off? We got so
we went way down the rabbit hole.
I'm usually pretty good at walking myself back.
Luring for sex.
Right.
There was definitely sex. Something about the fellator.
But before that, we were talking about that, first person.
We were talking about Call of Duty and how it had.
You were specifically going to say something.
Yeah, that's what I'm like. Oh man, what the fuck was I going to say?
Boy, we went after that tangent hard.
Oh yeah, we did. That was good. Hard. This may have been the first time.
That was the first strong tangent at the beginning that we've had in a while.
Yeah, we wrecked ourselves on this one.
Boy,
like, did not check ourselves. Definitely remember my point now. So yeah. So the question coming through is. Should I get an Xbox One or a PS4 or that other thing that distracted us before?
The console that shall remain nameless.
The Nintendo Castanet. The Sega Castanet.
I'd play that.
Yeah. Oh, God damn it. Don't tangent us again. I'm going to fucking lose it. But the advice given and the advice that I've even given is what do you play the most and what do you play with your friends?
Right.
So it's Call of Duty and my friend has an Xbox One. Well, then, okay.
Yeah, that's
then,
pretty clear. Yeah.
You already have your precedent set. You're going to play Call of Duty and your friend has an Xbox One. Go get an Xbox One.
Right.
Because until there's cross-platform play, which has been proposed, but I think...
That has been on everyone's wish list forever.
Forever, but there's money to be made and money to be had, so I doubt that's going to happen until it's
it's going to be a
scenario coming.
It's going to be a long time coming before that.
Yeah, it's a long time coming. It'll happen next week because we suck at predictions.
God, I hope so.
Yeah. Right. Oh man, if that comes next week, that's
then done between like PC.
I will be so happy to be wrong.
Yeah.
If that shows up next week.
But that's because of their prevalence and because they're advertising everywhere, even places where people like us who've been playing video games our entire lives of all genres. We can sit down and watch a football game and say, wow, I was going to buy that. And they're advertising it to me on this, this other thing that actually probably several billion people are watching at this point. Kind of speaks to the popularity of the genre. But noticing that, and we kind of mentioned before, like where anecdotally, again, what all the things that seemed to be popular at the time, like I can think off the top of my head, RPGs, were really big for a while. I guess you could go back even farther. You could say platformers.
Those were like the original Metroid. Popular games, right?
Yeah, that was the original shit to play. But I can think like RPGs starting with the SNES and especially the PlayStation era. Survival horror
was really big for a while.
Yeah. PS2.
Early PS2. 2000s.
Resident Evil, Resident Evil 2 started with that. Silent Hill. You could probably throw Dino Crisis in.
Time Crisis.
Not the same. Did you guys ever play...
I survived that horror, Danny.
Did you guys ever play Eternal Darkness?
Yes.
That was such a good game.
That was on
So I played
GameCube,
it on GameCube.
Right? Yeah.
It was a game...
Oh, that game was that fucked up, man.
It was designed to psychologically fuck with you as a player on, like, a meta level.
Like, it purposefully glitched?
Yeah, it would, like, glitch. Like, you'd go in through a door, and your character would just die. Like, there's nothing that killed him. He would just die. And then it would show you the game over screen. And you'd be like, what the fuck? Yeah. And then it would, like, flash black and then put you back as though you just walked through the door.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
And so it was like this.
As if you had a vision of your own death.
Oh, please, please give me another one.
It was very, it was very interesting. And you played throughout time, like, all these different characters, like, present, future, way in the past, like Roman times.
Oh, man.
It was this really interesting game, actually.
I'm glad and sad that you brought that up, because I think I buried that game in just the depths of my mind. It was great, and it actually, like, really freaked me the fuck out.
Yeah. It was disturbing.
I have a really high tolerance when that game was. And I think it would even do, like, weird graphical glitches, everything to just psych you out. Like, what the shit? What's going on?
At certain points, it would reverse your thumbstick. So you push forward and make you turn left.
Oh my God,
and it did all this crazy shit where it just would fuck with you as a player to make it like this weird, trippy experience just intermittently throughout the game.
It was great. I remember playing it, and I played it with the same buddy that I played through Metal Gear Solid with. And he pointed out, or his comment was, it's like you're fighting Psycho Mantis the entire game. Because the first time you fight Psycho Mantis, he just mirrors your every move. And you're like, he keeps killing me. I can't beat this guy. And then you figure out you actually have to remove the controller and put it into port number 2. Because he can't, quote unquote, read your mind that way. Just this weird meta above the game, crazy shit. And then, of course, you have the little hint beforehand where it would fake the little video screen where think back to old school TVs where you change the input and it would say video up at the top, but it said Hideo instead of video. So it was Hideo Kojima. You're like, oh, that's kind of weird that it would do that, but signaling you to say, like, hey, change the input, like little, like, oh, this game's broken. No, my TV doesn't do that. When it changes inputs, it makes a different thing.
Right.
Oh, I got it. And he was like, it took that one little bit and made an entire game out of it. And it's, oh God, that game fucked with us so much.
That's a good game.
But that was part and parcel of an entire series where I still remember other people saying, like, other people I'd never imagined play video games. Like, oh yeah, it's like, I love Resident Evil. I love Resident Evil 2. This the survival horror, not even like what you want to call it, the zombie genre, but I kind of lumped them all together, or Silent Hill Hill series. And then I think the first person shooter one really came about. Like, obviously the multiplayer made it huge, because before that, like, Dreamcast was really the first online console, and the big thing for that online was Phantasy Star, so that was the online RPG. But where it really changed was Halo. All of a sudden Halo hit the ground, and you have the two analog sticks on your controller, you've got greater control, and then Bungie just knocked it out of the park.
And the game just felt good.
Yeah.
The story was super fun. And
the music was compelling.
The music. Oh, and the rise and fall of the music as you played.
So anytime you could play the beginning notes of the little Halo chant music.
So good.
And you'll see people stop. Like, is somebody playing Halo? So what's going on? And people you wouldn't expect as well. Like, any origin, any gender, whatever, like, because you always assume, like, oh, that's dudes playing that, but I've met so many people who that's they can recognize it out of nowhere.
Oh yeah.
And it seemed like that's where things started to shift a little bit, as this became the most popular genre, and that's what everybody's playing all of a sudden.
Right.
Yeah, people are still playing other things. GTA 5 is one of the largest selling media pieces of all time.
Right.
You know, it outsold the music industry and the entire music industry in its first month just by game sales alone.
Right.
But based on all of that and, like, all of these things that we've kind of come through, like, you can kind of see, like, the survival horror is, like, kind of led into first person stuff, which kind of led to online. What do we think is going to be next? What's going to be the next
big genre. What's going to be the next fad? What predictions do we have?
Well, I think that as kind of a continuation of sort of where I think we are right now, in addition to like FPS, I think one of the things that has become very popular, especially with the advent of the internet and things like Steam and PlayStation Online and Xbox Live, is a lot more indie titles that kind of span a lot of genres. But I feel like indie still sort of has like a particular feeling to it,
right,
that doesn't quite like it sort of transcends a specific genre.
Yeah. It's very experimental often.
But I feel like I'm seeing a lot of indie games get very popular. Mm-hmm. Like Rocket League is one that comes to mind.
Powerful.
It's so successful. And I feel like,
again, Firewatch. Everybody's played Firewatch that I can speak to.
And like just all over the place, these kinds of games.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's
and that has that multiplayer online replayability.
Yeah, it's that quick game. It's easy to learn the controls.
In. Yeah,
and
anytime you want, you can hop in, play a few rounds, and it doesn't necessarily take away from the, from that. You know, I want to sit down and be alone by myself and play my video game because it's such a quick kind of fix.
Yeah,
it hits you really easily. Whereas I would say even some first person shooters are a little bit alienating in that you can hop in and just be so destroyed so badly.
Oh, God. It's
so frustrating and painful.
It can be so twitchy control. I think
Counter-Strike is the epitome of that, where there is a steep learning curve, and if if you're willing to just sit around and get your ass kicked for a while, you might learn how to play, but just it's not a game where it's easy to jump in and be anywhere approaching successful.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I feel like might make first person implode or could eventually ruin it is there's a recent announcement of like the PlayStation Pro, and Microsoft has their Xbox, their Project Scorpio along the way. So it's even within the own console generation, like Project Scorpio is going to be faster than the Xbox One. And you're kind of hitting that thing where you are in PC gaming where sometimes you can be better because you have a faster thing, because you have spent more money to have a better thing to be more twitchy and more responsive with.
It's actually interesting that you say that, because I think I was reading a statement by Sony where they were saying that on multiplayer aspects of their games, they were going to like throttle the higher end consoles. To not like outperform the lower end consoles.
I did see Sony saying that. And effectively, the only thing that would really remain higher would be its GPU output.
Right.
And really, the Pro is just like a 4K. And they haven't announced much else from the.
I think you're probably still going to have an advantage for things like draw distance, probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, if it's a shooter, you might be able to see your enemy a second before he sees you, and that in a first-person shooter, if that could be all it takes, right?
Get
a kill.
Even nowadays, by the standards, like even the standard PlayStation 4 has an incredible draw distance.
Right.
So it might just be like, if you have a 4K TV,
you'll be able to see that detail just
much more.
Right.
But that's the whole reason you would have a PlayStation Pro, and then. I'd be curious to see what Microsoft has to say about it, because their entire thing with Project Scorpio is like, this is actually going to be faster and more powerful. Like it's the next iteration in our lineup of consoles. So hopefully there might be some sort of equalizer to it, where just because you bought in later or you bought again or et cetera, doesn't necessarily mean that you should therefore have the play advantage versus somebody else who maybe bought a launch console.
Right.
You know, like, hey, I bought in at the beginning. Why the fuck am I getting screwed over on my games? And that's the only thing that can really make me think that like first person might implode. Not for that it's a bad genre, but that people would eventually become frustrated. And that's why it became so popular on console systems, was because it's still popular on PC, but there's a huge divide in PC. There's a huge learning curve for a lot of them, unless they make it really, really good. Which I think is why, like in the first-person category, things like Team Fortress 2 came into prominence.
Yep.
Or Overwatch. Overwatch is really big right now. Mm-hmm. Where it's still the very first-person thing, but
it's got like
more
a team aspect.
That's specializations.
And performance-wise, it's still very friendly.
Overwatch is one of those games that
shows me that newer consoles, newer generations of consoles, are the reason first person became popular. FPSs could only exist if they can be rebalanced. They can only exist if they can be rebalanced. You need to have a very precise team balance if you're going to do multi-character FPSs. So if you do like original Halo, that sort of thing, you're just playing somebody else. Right. It's the exact same person that you're playing. You both start with the exact amount of options that each other has.
Right.
The maps are balanced the way that they're balanced because they've undergone, you know, loads and loads of testing. But now it's a little more quick release cycle, and they put it out, and then they say, okay, well, this is how people are exploiting the system.
This has to be tweaked. Yeah.
Yeah, and these types of teams are forming. This type of gameplay needs to be tweaked. And they rebalance in an update, which couldn't be done with the previous generation console.
And fighting games have dealt with that for years. The myriad of versions of Street Fighter, even back to Street Fighter 2, would include Turbo. Yeah, obviously it enhanced it, but it also included balancing efforts. Like, this was an actual arcades bought PCBs with new versions of the game on it because gamers figured out how to exploit this character against this and do this and that. And it's still to this day, like, there's Street Fighter 4, Super Street Fighter 4, Ultra Street Fighter 4, and they plan on them because their QA can only get so far, and then it gets out into the world where 800 million people are playing it, and then somebody's, you know, people are going to find things, because just by law of statistics, you're going to find something. So it's like, okay, well, Super Street Fighter 4, we'll fix this, and then we'll fix this, or Smash Brothers, etc. That's obviously the fighting game genre. But yeah, the multi-character one is always going to have that update and pushing the patches and trying to balance things out. Yeah.
Maybe why it became more popular on the PC first.
Easier patchability. Consoles really didn't catch to the patching until really PlayStation 3.
Until, the larger hard drives.
PlayStation 3, Xbox 360 era, where you had a more frequently updating OSes. Yeah, PlayStation 2 was connectable, and so was Xbox, but the original PlayStation 2, I remember the first connection kits came with like Final Fantasy XI because it came with a hard drive and network port.
That's right.
And until they made the Slim, the network port wasn't built in. So, and the rest is history. But you're thinking indies.
Well, I was adding that as like a commentary to what we're kind of currently seeing.
Yeah.
I think
it's big. It's definitely big in the console market, and it's reflective of what's happening in the mobile market.
So to, okay, I'm just going to put my prediction out there. Okay. I think what we're going to see is a swell in like action RPGs or action adventure RPGs because I hope Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is a smash hit.
Ooh.
The way that like Ocarina of Time was a smash hit.
It's already a smash hit in my heart.
Yeah.
Even if it's a flop, it's a smash hit in my heart.
No, I'm going to love it. I hope. And I hope it's not another Skyward Sword. Anyway.
See, I still like Skyward Sword. The controls just got annoying.
It ruined it for me.
Did it really ruin it? The entire game?
There was a boss fight. I can't remember which one. But I could not win it because, as with most of the boss fights in that game, you had to hold the controller up to charge the thing in order to attack the boss.
Yeah.
And my fucking controller decided to bug out at that specific moment, and so I would like hold the controller up and Link would lift his sword and then he would do this
and so not got the charge. Yeah.
And so I would just die, and I did it like 10 times, and I was like, I think I'm done with this game. This is awful.
It definitely made it. I think I remember that boss where you had the, like, you needed the sword charge.
But yeah,
it definitely made it, but I'm still like, anyway. Ultimate, like, the controls, controls were like, if on a scale of 1 to 10, they were a 2.
That
shit, but
it's his fucking sword, for God's sake. Like, that is the thing that he does, is swing a sword.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do it. So anyway, I hope that we don't have that problem with Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that that kicks off like a string of significant quote-unquote copycats, or games that are in the same like vein that people kind of get behind. You get a good story, it's action oriented, so it's not, you know, I think a lot of people are going to shy away from the more traditional RPGs that fan of, and that I to a lesser degree am a fan of.
They are definitely there. It's a genre that I know is probably not going to see prominence again, if ever. I mean, maybe it will, but
most people are not willing to sink nowadays 200 hours into a story.
Mm-hmm. What's the time? The complexity usually. Yeah. It's not as accessible as many other genres. So that my prediction and hope is action RPGs.
I think you've got some good legs to stand on because you have things that are like GTA 5, which is a huge seller amongst a lot of people. Yes, it's kind of an open world action game, but still, it's a lot of people playing that game who don't normally play games. And I've worked with people who they just meet up online and they just go and fuck around in GTA.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you have a game that comes in like Breath of the Wild, where all of a sudden it's like, hey, there's this big open thing where you can kind of do whatever you want. You can, and the physics engine is incredible, and you can fuck around with whatever you want. But there's also something compelling that keeps you coming back to the game. Like, GTA 5 story is good. Like, Rockstar is very good at writing a story, but their entire thing is they write a gritty, edgy story.
Right.
You might not always want to be part of it. Like, this is a big quest. This is something big, something bigger than yourself is always the kind of the Zelda mantra. And combined with stuff like people falling in love with fantasy again, like with great Game of Thrones, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be a very winning combination. So that's probably a good prediction.
Yeah. Here's hoping.
Here's hoping. Trevor, are you thinking anything might come along to be the next fad genre? Something might usurp it.
Yeah. The thought behind my prediction is based on a major flop.
Okay.
major flop, and that's No Man's Sky.
Oh, okay.
So the concept of infinite universe games and building block games combining together is what I'm sort of thinking. So not open world necessarily, but open universe or procedurally generated universe combined with building block. So if we look at the success of something like Minecraft, right, and combine that with an open universe type game where there's worlds to be visited and things to be harvested, that is the Legos of our generation. That's what we did when we were at home and we were playing with our Legos and we're putting things together, and suddenly we've got this huge fortress and there's a you're tossing in your little Star Wars playset, and it's swooping down and blowing up your fortress and stuff like that. And put those together, and you've got a really compelling open universe for kids to explore. And it's even compelling to adults because of the sort of exploratory kind of fantasy element of it. I grew up on Star Wars, Star Trek, these types of things. I've always wanted to explore the universe and that sort of thing. So to be able to go from one planet to another planet was always, I saw this No Man's Sky and I'm like, I can explore an entire planet and then go to another one.
This is
absolutely what I want to do with my life.
Yeah, yeah.
And then obviously there was maybe some presumptions on the part of society that were or were not stated by the developers.
may or may not have been.
And some promises that were potentially made that were dropped. But combining these two into something could create kind of an infinite universe of exploring and building. And that's sort of what I was looking at. There's actually a Kickstarter right now that's running that does something similar to this, but it's PC only, so I shan't mention.
Well, now you have to.
Well, now you gotta say it.
You gotta say it.
I think it's Dual Worlds, I believe is what it's called.
Okay.
I'll have to look that up. Fact check myself.
They have a console stretch goal? Like what was the new what was the new game that the Myst people did?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Yooka-Laylee.
Well, I thought that was starting on console. Like I backed it and I got to pick whatever console.
Was it? I thought it was PC and then stretch goal was consoles.
All I know is I backed it and then they were like, "All right, what console do you want it for?" And I said Wii U.
Right.
Because I was like, "Hey, Nintendo Nostalgia. They had Xbox One and PS4."
I'm almost certain that it was going to be a PC exclusive with stretch goals of console to match.
Really?
I'm pretty
Dual Universe.
Dual Universe.
Yeah, and it's an MMORPG, so technically it's going to grab the kind of character and skill building trees and that sort of thing as a singular person. So you can do what you want in the game, but it's... I think they're calling it vector-based, and I don't exactly know the terminology, but they say that every building, ship, anything, weapon, anything that you see in the game is built in-game. It's not... They're not going to provide anybody with anything.
Interesting. So, it's just all... It has frameworks.
Everybody starts on the same planet, and then...
Just spreads it out.
Society builds itself.
That's an interesting... concept.
Yeah. And there's supposed to be politics and, I mean, the whole nine yards. So it's kind of an EVE Online sort of a...
EVE Online meets what was it? The original Star Wars MMO?
Yeah.
That I can't...
Galaxies?
Think. Galaxies. Yeah.
I think that's going to be...
Meets Minecraft.
Right. Minecraft. Well, that's... You hit the nail on the head when you were saying, like, that they just need... It needs to be more compelling.
Yeah.
Like, whereas No Man's Sky was... again, that was an indie developer. That was Hello Games.
Yeah.
Right. And... As far as a technological achievement, I mean, you make a system that can produce, randomly generate 18 quintillion planets. That's incredibly impressive. That's super impressive. Where, like you said, kind of flop, or where people got lost. And you might even be able to blame the hype of Sony or so much getting behind it. Said, yeah, this is going to be it. This is going to be awesome. And, you know, maybe Hello Games saying, like, who knows? There's a lot of, like, back and forth with that. But... Where it needs to be built upon is when I go to this other planet, there has to be something that draws me into it, because I'm playing a game not to be bored by it, or not to just be like, oh, ho-hum, there's just a bunch of plants. Who cares?
And I would argue that Hello Games wanted that to feel relaxing, not boring.
Right, right.
They wanted somebody to sit back and explore.
If you look at Minecraft, there are, like, no objectives.
There's nothing...
Start and you're just a dude.
Yeah.
You punch a fucking tree and you punch some dirt and then you make an axe.
Yeah.
And now you can chop trees instead of punching them, and then you can eventually get a pickaxe. And it's like, the only progression is as much as you want to do.
Right.
Arguably the only goal is don't die.
Yeah.
And
it just seems to be when you throw in that exploration element, when you get in there, it's like all of a sudden somebody feels like there's... It might just be a psychological switch that flips that says there needs to be a purpose here.
And people can play it in the ways that they want to play it. So it's not just exploratory. Maybe they want to join in the politics of the game and use it as a political thriller or something like that.
I wasn't a huge, like, Star Trek fan or anything like that, but I remember watching Next Generation because I love Patrick Stewart. And just what was always interesting is, like, every episode would start and they'd be above some new planet and there'd be something interesting, something compelling about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what got people interested. So I think you add that to element where the game can somehow make something interesting about this place, something really unique that is compelling and keeps people going with it.
Yeah.
That'll keep the genre going.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they could bring it to consoles, that would open it to a whole new generation of gamers too. Yeah, I think
absolutely.
Yeah,
that would be a really smart move on their part. So if anybody's listening, for
this is copyright, Trevor.
Bring it to consoles.
Yeah, do it,
and make it cross-platform so that everybody can play together.
I'd really be curious to see if that has, like, a console stretch goal, because that seems to be a very common thing.
Right.
Like a Hyperlight Drifter, what friend of the show Patrick was talking for a while and got us hooked on it. And I think their original idea, that one was an old 8-bit sort of thing. So that was, it's immediately like, why isn't this on console? They're like, well, development costs are a little bit more for that. So that's a stretch goal. Like, okay, cool. Money, money, money.
Yeah.
Throw money at it. All right.
Shut up and take my money. Give me your
game.
We're
going to make it for consoles now.
Carmageddon did that as well.
Did they really?
Yeah, they did a Carmageddon reboot.
Sweet. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I backed it, and they blew away their stretch goals.
I
should be everywhere.
I have to time my Kickstarter visits, because when you go in, it's similar to the Wikipedia hole, but it costs you money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's just like, well, awesome.
If it gets fully funded,
yeah, true.
It also doesn't lead to Nazis.
Oh, yeah, what is it, like, within 10 Wikipedia is going to lead you to Hitler or something like that? Like 10 links? Somebody found
10 links
out,
to Hitler.
Yeah, 10 links to Hitler is the average or something.
The Kevin Bacon of...
Yeah, it really is. Hitler is the Kevin Bacon of Wikipedia. You heard it here first.
All right, I'll give you mine. My prediction. Mine's a little bit of a stretch, and it's in my own head. I don't necessarily even 100% believe it, but I really kind of want it to be the fad. I really want this to be the next big thing that takes off. We had a discussion about VR a little while ago, to which I know there's a lot of everything feels polarized. It's either people are like, no, it's dumb. Whatever, it's not going to catch on, or everybody else is like, this is the future of gaming. And I'm the Buddhist here. I'm taking the middle way. I'm like, I think for very specific things and maybe even some unique things, it's going to be the most amazing way to play a video game. And where I think that fad is going to take off, because people who play a good VR experience say they absolutely love it, and it really changes their perception of things. And what I got really excited for at E3 was Sony introducing Resident Evil 7 with the VR experience. Yes, I know some people say, no, it's kind of taking the different approach from the normal survival horror. It might be more adventure style. To me, it almost looked more like the slightly less like action-oriented game D, which came out for like Sega Saturn, and I think even PlayStation got it, which it was, I think, more like Myst. Like, you didn't have guns or ammo in it, but there was a lot of, like, investigation, weird, crazy shit happening, very, you know, survival horror sort of stuff. But, obviously, it's Resident Evil, so it'll take a slightly different approach. But it's going to be, big for PlayStation 4, and then they said, oh, also, we're making this is also going to be on PlayStation VR. Prior to that, when it was like, you can play first-person shooters in VR, and my first thought was, how much of the population is going to get motion sickness from that? Right. Probably 90%.
With the twitchiness.
With the sheer twitchiness of that. And then even below that, you're going to have people like with flight simulators, because I know like Star Wars is doing their flight sim for it, which actually looks really cool. But as soon as they showed that for VR, something clicked for me. I was like, yep, I will. Like, once VR becomes an affordable or achievable thing that actually has good real, yeah, I will be so excited to play that.
So is your overall prediction just VR as a genre?
No. The return of survival horror, or possibly, I mean, I kind of want to say with like a survival horror or just some sort of interactive horror of sorts.
Okay.
Just because it's like, you know what, I should probably land on something. But the broader category would be exploratory VR.
Imagine like a Twitch detective game. Style game.
Yeah, detective style. That would be awesome. Holy shit. Yeah. Oh my God. If they rebooted Snatcher for VR, Snatcher is an old Hideo Kojima game from way back in the day. Yeah. It was actually the first game Metal Gear was the first. Snatcher was the first one that actually made it to the States.
Okay.
That he produced. And it was kind of an interactive, almost point and clicky sort of venture. It was on the Sega CD. The game is fucking amazing. And it was his tribute to his love for mysteries and cyberpunk. He had a ton of Blade Runner references in there.
Nice.
That game was so good. I also remember being a kid and being at a friend's house and playing it. And it was the first game I ever saw where, like, in scene 3, you just see this dude's head blown off and there's maggots in his empty, like, neck hole. It's like, oh my God, that's in a video game! But something kind of I would say the broader category would be that interactive detective game or hell, like even a kid's game, like a Professor Layton, like in VR would be actually really, yes. really cool, because those games are amazing on the touch interface on Nintendo DS and 3DS. But survival horror, like that was such a popular genre already, and we kind of see the way things tend to make returns. So I think something like that, and horror movies still to this day are high grossing in the theaters. I see something like
which
that.
Which is funny, because I don't ever... I ask people if they like horror movies, and nobody says
yes. Nobody says they do, but they just...
I feel like the horror movies, at least from my experience, that's where the high school kids spend their money on, like, Friday night. You go see, like, whatever the most recent horror movie is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I used to get dragged with my friends, and I don't like horror movies, but that's what everybody was going to see.
I absolutely love horror movies.
Trevor does.
I love them.
We'll have to have him, because Danny's our kung fu movie master.
Ooh.
And so if Trevor's our horror movie master...
Oh, yeah.
We might have
I'm into it.
Yeah. Movie night.
Kung fu horror.
Kung fu horror.
Double feature.
double fisting feature.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah. Scary double fisting feature?
Yeah. And you're scary double fisting. That could be the theme. Yeah, that could be the title.
Obviously, you're the pornography.
Yeah. Following up with
the niche porn genre.
The double fisting.
The niche
porn. Only double fisting, though.
Only double fisting slime people.
Yeah, don't underestimate Ian's love of slime porn. He will talk to you about it for way longer than is necessary.
Endlessly.
I can't wait to hear about this at work.
Endlessly. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's going to be great.
You can wait. Just...
I'll send you some links. I'll send you some links, dude.
He says that, and then it takes
him... I don't do it.
It takes him 3 months to send you
that remain drinking blue. Or something. Well, one of the other things that makes me think that the horror or the thriller, maybe even you could say thriller genre, will be very popular is, speaking of Kojima... him and Guillermo del Toro did PT previous year, which was, it just showed up on the PlayStation. We all know the saga. Showed up on the PlayStation Store one day. It was free. It was this weird, trippy trailer. PT literally stood for playable trailer. And it was a lead-in of just the concept and the thought of what they wanted to do. And if you actually got to the proper end of it, it introduced... the reboot of Silent Hill, which they were calling Silent Hills, and it was a collaboration between Hideo Kojima and Guillermo del Toro. But as we all know, that, you know, Konami shit in their own mouths and, you know, decided to do stupid things instead of continue with that. So who knows what will happen. He's working on Death Stranding now, which they've started releasing more details on, which is very cool. But nonetheless, people, like, you can go to eBay because you can't get that game from the store anymore. It was pulled from the store. You actually have to have a PlayStation account, a PlayStation that hasn't been updated and has that game installed on it. So you can go to eBay and buy somebody's PlayStation that has this downloaded on their account or whatever, and it's going to cost you like $3,000 because you can't get this game anymore. But people loved it. They wanted to play that game.
Wow.
So the more and more I see, it's like, I have a feeling that if VR becomes an actual gaming thing, an actual gaming fad, it's going to be these interactive adventures. And I'm going to bet some money on the horror genre becoming fairly popular with it.
I think I could see that. Mm-hmm. That's a reasonable prediction. Yeah.
I think it's a reasonable one. I doubt it's a statistically probable one. But there's just enough that makes me curious about it that I want to say, like, I wonder if things are going to go this
way. Having seen recently... today, actually, seen a tech demo of the Vive or the Vive? I don't know exactly.
It's HTC?
Yeah, HTC.
I think I hear it pronounced Vive. So,
a friend of mine got the dev kit for that and did a little Twitch video of him playing around in one of their sandboxes.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And it was really interesting. But as he was just with his hands out in front of his body, no controllers or anything, as he was creating things in this virtual world and flinging them and making them float and drop down, I can see a great potential for actual, like, fighting games.
Yeah.
You know, you've got enough bandwidth now. We've got plenty of bandwidth. Mm-hmm. You got two people across the world. They can do what they will, create objects, or, you know, maybe they've got magic powers or something like that, and a specific hand movements and things like that. Mm. That would be something that would draw me in right away.
That would be awesome.
Right away.
I think that's what's going to make or break VR is the concepts are endless, but it sounds silly, but the things that are going to succeed are the things that aren't going to make people sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Genuinely. Like, what isn't going to give me motion sickness? Like, if you can figure out a fighting game that doesn't give people vertigo or make them motion sickness or give them motion sickness at all, like, you will have achieved success. That's really what's going to make it. And that's kind of what's making me think, like, the environmental games are going to be big at first. That's what's going to be the selling point.
Where you don't have to, we're not moving quickly.
Yeah,
you don't, you're looking nothing happening
at things. Yeah, and
We grow to understand, you know, eye capture and where you're moving and the ways that screens that close to your face interact with your eyes and stuff like that, I think it'll only get better.
Yeah,
definitely. We're only going to grow on that.
We're really at the precipice of things. I don't know if it's, we've had this discussion, I don't know if it's going to be the thing that overtakes the classic, because really, my belief is still, like, what do people really want to do? They want to sit at a couch and
chill,
look at something.
Chill the fuck out.
Yeah, so...
I played endless hours of a sandbox game. I'm pretty sure it was either made for children or or for people who are on acid. Where you
basically
were
the same.
You were a like worm creature, and you could stretch and move around, and there were absurd objects in the world that you could butt into. God, this is a PlayStation Network download.
Was it like a bunch of like geometric shapes that you ate and like got bigger?
Yeah.
Is it Flow?
No. Oh, okay. It was not Flow. No, this was a
Flow was good. That was like a fun game. It was Flower.
Flower
also
was
good.
Really, really beautiful.
Yeah. I hate it when games make me cry.
I know, right?
This was much weirder than that. I think it was okay. By the people who did Katamari.
Oh, okay.
And it was very Katamari feeling.
Also a super fun game.
Yeah.
Name escapes me, but I love Katamari.
It was also very Katamari feeling. Yeah. Like it had that weird absurdism to it.
Sure.
But I don't know why I brought this up.
It's all right, man. I'm enjoying hearing you talk about it.
Yeah, but it
I played it for hours. And I loved every moment of it. All I was doing was taking this worm guy and stretching him out and shrinking him up, pooping out stuff, and it was really
it sounds like a great time.
Strange. Yeah, and it was just dual controller, and one controller would control his back legs, and one controller would control one joystick would control back, and one joystick would control front.
Oh my god! Yeah,
and
I can see how that could get really addictive.
Yeah, and you click, and he would eat, and that's it. If you shrunk up enough, you'd shit out whatever he ate.
There's a lot,
and it would fly out.
There is a lot to be said about the simplicity of games. There really is. A mutual friend of mine and Danny's had his old Pong console from when he was a kid, and he found it, and it just wasn't working. He was like, "Hey, I know you're good with this stuff. Would you mind taking a look at it?" I was like, "Yeah, sure. What the fuck? You know, that'd be great. I've never worked on a system this old, so it'd be kind of cool." You know, several months go by because that thing was broken to hell and back, but just because it was sitting in somewhere. But once I got it fixed up and got it back to him, he was like, "We played that thing for hours." And it's literally all it is Pong. It is stationary. It has two potentiometer, two knobs, and it plugs into your TV and it plays that one game. It was the original Atari Pong.
We sat in his office the day that you brought it to him, and people were coming from all over the place. Are you guys playing Pong?
Fuck yeah.
And we're like, yeah, sit down, let's play. And it was so fun, man. We were just in there playing Pong and talking about like, oh, if you spin the knob just as you hit the ball, you can ricochet and speed it up. And so here's just a bunch of like 30 to 40 year olds sitting in his office trying to play Pong.
This is an 8-bit console, and it was only 8-bit because like that's what the processor, like that's how many bits it can handle. You didn't have that much color depth at all. Like you had just the shading of the rainbow on the LCDs that it displays now, but it was like two long pixel lines and one dot. And like
don't forget the halfway line.
Oh yeah, the halfway line of your numbers, but and even the numbers look weird because they were like really, really shitty bitmaps.
Terrible, shitty numbers.
Like, is that a Z or is it my score 2? I don't know. but there, people would play for it. And then he said he took it home and he was playing with the kids and everything. They were having a great time. But it's super simple game. It's take table tennis and put it on, you know, a cathode ray tube. And that's what that game was at that point. But I think that just speaks to a lot of like why people play video games and why things get popular from that realm. Because it creates a mutual sense of enjoyment, a mutual sense of community. And maybe that's going to be the next fad. What do you think is going to be the next fad? You should probably tell us, and we're going to tell you about how to do that. Preparations A through G have failed.
We are now moving on to Preparation H. On the whole, Preparation H feels pretty good. You're right. Preparation H does feel good. On the whole.
Nobby Nobby Boy. Oh my god, it's called Nobby Nobby Boy.
Nobby Nobby Boy.
Excellent. Fuck yes.
All right.
I'm so thrilled.
Oh, man.
All right, Ian.
All right.
Why don't you take us home?
I'm going to get us the fuck out of here. So, those are our predictions. You probably have your own that you probably want to yell at us about because yours are better than ours. We disagree with you, but that's fine. We still love you.
Make sure to cite your sources.
Yeah, make sure to cite your sources.
To get credit for your paper.
Yourself is not a source. Your friend can be your source. That's totally fine. My nice. Friend says this. But you can't be like, source me. No. Source my friend Ryan. That's totally fine.
Just put it on Wikipedia.
Yeah. Just put it on Wikipedia.
Have Ryan put it on Wikipedia.
Yeah, have Ryan put it on Wikipedia. Also
look less
fuck
sketchy.
You, Ryan.
Piece of shit. Ah, oh, you that Ryan guy.
Yeah, that guy sucks.
He's pretty cool. But anyways, that's our predictions going this time around. When you want to yell at us, your ideas and your predictions, there's a lot of ways you can find us. You can find us on the Twitter. You can find this guy, Danny Gwynn.
Hi.
I'm pointing at. He's right over there. Danny Gwynn, tell us how people can find you on the Twitter or elsewhere on the internet.
All right. So the primary way that you can reach out to me is on Twitter, @StrongestKungFu.
Why are you strongest kung fu, Danny?
Because I really like martial arts movies.
Do tell.
This week, I have a martial arts movie review for you. I've been on a big martial arts movie kick on Netflix. I have yet to watch them all, so I'm just going to keep churning through those. The most recent one I watched was a little film called Shaolin. Which is a super generic term.
I thought you were going to say Shitty Walk. I was like, is this a South Park thing? Shitty Walk.
No. Shaolin.
Shaolin.
It is about a general who's like this greedy guy, and he has this lackey who is like his right-hand man. And the general is like a shithead, and he like goes to stab another general in the back to gain some wealth, and ends up getting his ass kicked when his little subordinate guy turns against him. And so he comes to realize the error of his ways and joins a Shaolin monastery where Jackie Chan is the cook and is not good at martial arts. He's like this little cameo character. It's a great movie. The fight scenes are really good. It's much more modern. I think it's from like the 20 teens area.
I was about to say, like, what is this in Jackie Chan's career?
Yeah, it's much more recent.
He's broken.
Which is really funny because then he ends up using his cooking to fight during his one like fight scene that he has. It's pretty great. The fight scenes are good. The acting is actually good. The storyline is good. I like this one. I would give it a solid B+ to A-.
All right.
So I recommend checking it out. It's called Shaolin. No subtitle that I could see.
Is it streaming anywhere or is it
Netflix? Netflix is where I found it. Search Shaolin. There's like 1,000 martial arts movies that are either called just Shaolin or Shaolin something. Mm-hmm. So good luck.
But this one sounds like it's fairly recent.
It's fairly recent. I want to say it's 2014, 2013.
Shaolin of the Recents.
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
So anyway, that is my Kung Fu movie review for this week.
Nice. At Strongest Kung Fu.
Kung Fu.
Also, thanks to our first time and not last time guest, Trevor Dallier.
Yay! Thanks.
Hooray!
If you want to get a hold of Trevor, if you want to yell at Trevor that his games were dumb or his games were great, or you have a better prediction than him, he's shaking his head because he knows you're wrong.
He knows you're wrong.
You don't know me. Send an email to podcast@thebidpub.com. Subject line: Trevor, you were wrong.
Or right.
Dear Trevor, up
this
yours.
Is the internet.
It also works.
Dearest Trevor.
Yeah. Dearest Trevor, this is the internet.
I hope
people are going to send, if they're going to agree with you, it'll be proper correspondence.
Subject, you're wrong. Body, fuck off.
Fuck off.
Love the internet.
Yeah. And there will probably be some sort of
death
crime threatened upon you.
Oh, yeah.
Death
for sure.
Plenty of dick pics in there.
Yeah.
Just overflowing.
Yeah. Forward those along.
Yeah, send them along.
In fact, there'll be too many for our email carrier to actually handle. Like, it'll block that attachment size, so it'll probably just be an imager gallery of dick pics.
Except,
oh yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's so totally.
We'll comment on all of them.
800.
All right.
Well, gotta clear up the rest of my day.
Yeah. Now to rate every single one of these.
Yeah. 4, 4, 4.
10.
Oh, wow.
We both just
difference of opinion on that last one.
10.
2.
Garbage. But thanks for joining us, Trevor.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for hanging out with us and drinking with us. You can also find me @TheSpaceIan on the Twitter, where I tweet about space and video games.
and a lot of other stuff too. I was just in Chicago last week, so you probably saw a lot of food tweets and me like drunkenly sobbing how much I miss Chicago. You can ignore that. That's not an internal portion of my psyche. That's coming through to Twitter.
You can also find the entire podcast at the BitPub on the Twitter.
And where you can get a hold of any one of us. So if any one of those methods fails, just yell at us from that one. Or a friendly wave from there. That'd be great. We'd love to hear from you.
Way nicer than yelling.
Yeah, way nicer than yelling.
What's wrong with you people?
Yeah, we just assume that everyone, A, doesn't like us, and B, wants to angrily disagree with us.
Yeah, yeah, if they're listening at all.
If they are. They're probably not.
No. But. So that's a bit drunk for this week. This has been, and we are, actually a bit drunk.
Just a bit.
A tiny bit. Touch.
A bit.
Scooch my chair.
I forgot how good you
are. Oh, boy.
You are. Good that you is, are at that.
That is delightful.
You and be good.